Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Well, you know that sometimes we feature rather unique people on this show. Why? Because I think they're interesting, number one, but two, it just shows you that there are so many areas of interest, expertise, specialty that we can become aware of, and if you have a passion for something, the key is to follow it. My guest today, Elizabeth Dodd, has done exactly that. Now, Elizabeth has put together a book called In the Mind's Eye. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Donna.
Now, you're in Kansas, is that correct?
That is correct.
You are a professor of English at the Kansas State University. You've done a lot of writing. In fact, that is a real passion for you. And the photo of you in the book has you standing in front of this very primitive art form on a very, very old wall. It looks like it's a bull. What is it?
Well, it's a good question what it is. This is a photograph that was taken in southern Utah. It's one of many rock art sites here in the United States in the desert southwest that I visited while I was thinking about and working on the essays that comprise this book. This is a piece of rock art that is at least several hundred years old, probably. It's believed to be Fremont-style art created by indigenous people who lived in the area several hundred years ago. You said it looks like a bull. I think it looks like the torso of a human being with bison horns.
I was going to say that was my second choice.
I'm sorry?
That was going to be my second choice.
Yeah. And, of course, it's a really interesting piece. It appears to be drawn with charcoal, but it also has some colored paint involved as well. I had read about this particular image in a book, actually, discussing Fremont art, and so I was out with a friend trying to find the thing. And we were walking along this trail. There was a little bit of snow on the ground. It was February. There was hardly anybody in the area. We ran into, I think, two other people the entire day. And I kept scanning the canyon walls, the sandstone walls along the canyon, looking for hints of art. And suddenly we saw it as a distant little dot and scrambled up the hill. And there we were.
Rock art, depending on what part of the world you're in, can be absolutely amazing. And there's Aboriginal art in Australia that's been found in some of the oddest places. There's been rock art found throughout Europe, France, Italy, you know, in various caves. Some of it's thousands of years old. Now, you have focused on the rock art that has been in the United States, and I know that we have had rock art discovered throughout various areas of the United States, just like we have found burial grounds of different peoples. And it really promotes a lot of curiosity, I think. Who were these people? Why is it that they decided to do paintings in certain places on certain walls? And how is it they have been able to survive for so long? Some of them have been in deep recesses within caves. It's really quite interesting. Now, here you are. You're a professor of English. How in the world did you ever get interested in rock art?
Well, it's true. I'm a professor of English. I teach creative writing. And so art is my area of expertise, my interest. I think that language is my artistic medium. Whether I'm writing a poem or whether I'm writing an essay, I'm using language not merely for factual communication, but for artistic expression. And so I have to say that I'm interested in art in general.
Mm-hmm.
Years and years ago, on a vacation, It was the first time that I had ever been to New Mexico. I visited Chaco Canyon, and there is some really marvelous rock art there. I don't recall seeing very much that was painted at that point. Most of these were pictographs that had been carved or pecked into the rock surface and didn't have much paint involved with them.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it is. But I was very taken with it. And then I just didn't follow up on that interest with any kind of seriousness until just a few years ago when it was time for me to take a sabbatical leave, and I knew I would have lots of time to essentially give myself a little tiny crash course, you know, like a little independent study in anthropology, archaeology, and be able to travel to some places. So I knew that I had a large block of time. I went and lived in the Southwest for a couple of months, staying with a friend, doing a lot of traveling, spending a lot of time in my tent. I camped a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I visited rock sites in Southern California, in Nevada, in Utah, in Arizona, and in New Mexico. And I did so much reading in addition to my traveling.
Now, with all of this, you have put together a number of essays that touch on different perspectives. And I would imagine that camping out, I've had experiences of camping out in the desert, and it's a very ethereal kind of a feel. And then when you realize that people lived in these areas and left a trace of their story, because really, it raises more questions, I think, than gives answers, many of the things that have been discovered. For you, as you were doing this research, because in some ways, this is what starts a love of archaeology with some people, this is what creates an interest in art, as you've expressed, because it's complementary to your passion with writing, there's always something unique that touches you. You have a section in your book called Hear the Animal, and you talk about this particular location, and you say the voices in French in the acoustic chamber of the cave trace the body without a touch.
Yes.
Expound on that a little bit.
Sure. Well, this particular essay in the collection grew out of a trip that I got to make to France. As you said a few minutes ago, France is, of course, one of the earliest places that we knew about Paleolithic art, art that was created by people living during the Ice Age. And because these were in caves, they were protected from the elements and survived literally for thousands of years. Lots of people are familiar with Lascaux, one of the most famous caves, decorated caves in France. Lots of people are familiar with Altamira, the first cave that was discovered in Spain. I went to France and visited a number of these decorated caves that are open to the public. And here the animal combines many of those visits over the period of about a week or 10 days. I just kept going to one cave after another. And I was there early in the spring. My partner and I were there visiting before the real rush of tourists. So even though if you go in high summer, you're likely to be able to hear a tour in English. We didn't have very many English tours. I think we had one English language tour. And so I was relying on my French language skills, which are not that strong. I studied French 25 years ago when I was an undergraduate, but I brushed up, and I was working so hard. And one of the things that was so incredibly powerful for me was how attentive I needed to be at every minute in order to catch as much of the language that I could. And then frequently I was translating, both for Dave and for some other Americans or British people who were along for the tours as well. We, of course, can't touch the art in these caves. Even too much exhalation of the breath mm-hmm. can destroy the art. From what I gather, that's what's wrong with Lascaux. There have just been too many people in there. And the moisture of the breath, the bacteria of our own breathing, has created a kind of a an infection in the cave, you know, literally mold and bacteria growth on the paint. So you can't touch the art, but you can trace it with a laser pointer. You can trace it with your flashlight, and you can point to it and gesture with it and draw attention of your listener through language.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm trying to do in this passage as well, to reach out across distance, across time, and for a reader to reach to something they can't literally see, and they just have to figuratively see it as
well,
I describe it to them.
I think you do a very nice job of being able to bring this forth. Now, when you think of this, and I don't know the exact time frame on these caves, they're very, very old, and the materials that were used, whether they were cutting into the stone, it left a history about many, many species of animals that no longer live in that part of
That's
the world.
Right.
But it shows that horses were there. It shows there were all kinds of various cats. They have depictions of mammoths. They even depict various ceremonial stories. And our challenge is, how do you put the pieces together? Because if you look at it in our time frame, you walk into these caves, which a number of places throughout the world, they're actually not letting people go in certain caves anymore because of the fact that we as humans, like you've just said, when we breathe, we are bringing so many living components into an area that basically didn't have much in the way of air or anything else. So we're bringing all of this in, and they're really having to be alert to how they're going to take care of it. What can they do to preserve it?
That's right.
For future generations. So who knows? Maybe we'll have to walk in with masks and body armor the next time we go in. But the thing is that there is so much about history that is there. About
well, you're
environments
right.
and weather and many things that we, you know, we just assumed we knew so much about. And they've left their storybook on these walls.
Yes. I was lucky enough to go into one cave in particular that has never been open to the public. And so none of that contamination has been going on. Chauvet Cave was discovered in the 1990s and was immediately closed to the public. The researchers who go into the cave now can, they must wear particular clothing. They have to take off their shoes so that they're not tracking in bacteria or pollen or any other kind of contamination. They're not wearing face masks. You suggested we might have to do that. But they can't go in for long periods of time. The oxygen level is what it is in the cave. And,
mm-hmm.
Great care is being taken to preserve that, to not actually change the chemical makeup of the atmosphere within the cave. So when I was so fortunate as to be able to join a team of researchers and go down into Chauvet Cave, we went through what was almost like a little ritual going in. We took off our shoes. We were provided particular jumpsuits to cover everything. We had to take off our jewelry, our watches, our belts. We had to sign, of course, a waiver. We had to promise that we wouldn't spit in the cave. And then we went down, down, down. We climbed a ladder, and we entered this space that contains art that is believed to be 30,000 years old. It's
wow.
believed to be the oldest existing decorated cave site in the world. And what's so fascinating, Donna, is there's actually very little in the way of human portraiture. What moved these artists was the natural world, the
mm-hmm.
animals.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, one of the famous theories for this kind of art for a long time was that it was hunting magic, that in some way the artists were imbuing themselves with power to go out and hunt. And yet a lot of the animals that are depicted are not prey animals. They're other predators. And they're so incredibly beautiful. The lions that you mentioned in Chauvet Cave have been extinct in that part of Europe for a very long time. They look almost like cougars from the American West.
Mm-hmm.
And they are so lifelike. They're so beautifully rendered. There are rhinoceroses in that cave. And, of course, there haven't been rhinoceroses in Europe for thousands of years, not since the Ice Age. Mammoths, as you mentioned. So it really is, it's another world. It gives us a view of a world that doesn't exist anymore. At the same time, those artists are us.
Mm-hmm.
They don't live in our time period. They have a very different culture. They were hunter-gatherers long before the rise of agriculture. But they were us. They had symbolic thought, obviously. They had very strong aesthetic tastes. And they were our forefathers. One of the things that I liked so much in being in France was the tour guides always spoke of our ancestors. They never spoke of the artists as those ancient others.
Mm-hmm.
They were us. They were the ancient us.
You have a chapter in your book, In the Mind's Eye, that deals with the Shannon Creek Eagles.
Yes.
And tell us about how you got involved with that. You have been reading The Armchair Naturalists, and you just found out so much information. Tell us about the eagles.
Well, this is actually one of the first essays that I wrote in this book, chronologically. And I was lucky enough, again, to have some connections. I know a biologist in town. I was introduced to a biologist in town who works for the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks, who does research involving bald eagles. And I went along to watch some banding of young eagles who were in their nest. As I'm sure your listeners know, eagle populations were much diminished throughout North America because of the use of the pesticide DDT, but they had been extirpated from Kansas decades before DDT really took off.
Mm-hmm.
They'd just been shot. Farmers mm-hmm. in Kansas didn't like them. They thought that they were competition.
Heck, in Alaska, then I've got a photo in a book somewhere. It was appalling to me. But in Alaska, I think in the 1800s, early 1900s, they were giving $5 for every pair of eagle's feet that you could kill. And a guy had a clothesline filled with hundreds of them.
Oh, yes.
And there's that photo. It's a National Geographic photo that's just, it speaks unbearably. It's painful just to look at it.
Yes. One description I read of a writer early in the century who was he was expressing the same kind of dismay and disgust that you are. He suggested that people who do this shooting are wanton creatures. It wasn't quite that bad, I don't think, here with hundreds and hundreds of eagles shot for bounty, but they were extirpated, and so they hadn't been nesting in the state for a very long time. We had an interest in bringing them back. We've had support from local landowners who've been delighted to have eagles nesting on their land again. And one day, this pair just showed up north of town, near the reservoir, near where I live, and laid eggs.
Mm-hmm.
They've been there almost every year since the 1990s. And each year that they do come to nest, they raise one or two chicks. And so I was really, really touched by the fact that they're coming back to re-inhabit the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas is my adopted home. I wasn't born here. I didn't grow up here, but it's been my home for the last two decades. And I felt a kind of just a delight. I was cheering them on, you know, that these eagles were coming back home and making their family there. So the Shannon Creek Eagles was sort of it was just the beginning toehold that as I was imagining, what do I want to do for my next book? And I knew that I wanted to explore our relationships to places. And those are emotional relationships. their artistic relationships, their historic relationships, and just doing some more reading about Kansas history and the history of the United States in recognizing the trouble with DDT and recovering from it. And we have done a great deal of recovery since the EPA was established. We've come a long way, and I kind of wanted to celebrate those things in that essay.
I also found it fascinating, the information that you have regarding reservoirs, and that the reservoirs are plagued with agricultural runoff, not residue from heavy industry, and you worry about the potential effects of atrazine, an herbicide that concentrates in the reservoir periodically, and it's a weed killer that's known to cause sexual deformities in frogs and prostate cancer in humans. So you did. You had some quite interesting research that came out.
Yeah, I did a lot of reading around. Of course, I'm not a chemist. I'm not a wildlife biologist. I'm not an archaeologist. I'm not an art historian. But I'm lucky enough to be a writer who has the opportunity to just indulge any interest that I have and try to follow these threads of thought and, as you say, do some research. When I do research, it's reading. I'm, as you said, I'm the armchair naturalist. I was concerned about the possibility that atrazine might be harmful to the eagles as they're coming back, because I knew that agricultural runoff is a source of pollution in my state. Of course, eagles nesting around the Great Lakes for some time had to contend with heavy metals. We all know that the Great Lakes were very badly polluted by heavy industry. That's not the case where I live. I was delighted to hear that the little bit of testing of the birds that's been done has suggested that their blood is clean. And there don't seem to be any abnormalities or sexual deformities in the birds who are returning to nest in Kansas. Of course, that doesn't mean that won't change, but for now, they're doing pretty well.
Well, I think as we become more aware, that is what I think is significant. Whenever we can talk about these things, whenever we can read about them, it empowers us in a way that we might otherwise not think is possible, that it enables us to be consciously present with what we use, what we become alert to, because if something affects nature in a negative way, we're part of that natural environment. So it's going to affect us, too.
Well, you're absolutely right. Unfortunately, having just individual citizens be aware and have a sense of personal responsibility isn't enough. And I don't want to turn this suddenly into an extensive political discourse, but with the recent election, I have been called so many times, probably half a dozen times by pollsters, and the environment was never offered to me as one of the issues to see whether I was most concerned about it.
Mm-hmm.
The economy, the war, these are the issues that we're asked about. The environment never was. I would say I'm worried about the environment. Well, they'd say that's not on our list.
Mm-hmm. Well, then it's on the list of a lot of people. I know my audience has definitely got it on their list. It's something that they are very concerned about. You have covered so many different things in your writings. You've traveled to different parts of the world. You really want to bring what you have experienced, whether you're wandering through the desert, through caves in France, seeing photographs done about Ethiopia, poverty, whatever. You bring through your essays in Mind's Eye a picture where someone can journey, where someone can be able to share in what you have been aware of, eagles, prairie dogs, all of these various things that you have come across. What would you say to someone who has an interest in writing, because this is a passion of yours? What if when they look at a bookstore and they say, oh my goodness, who'd want what I write? There's so many thousands of people out there writing. Who would want to listen to what I would put down on a piece of paper. What would you say to that prospective writer?
Well, it kind of depends on who that prospective writer is. Young writers, of course, have their whole lives ahead of them. And they can... Let me back up just a little bit. There's an old cliche, write what you know. And I think that's useful for writers to a certain extent. But as you can tell talking to me, I think write what you don't know, because then you have the opportunity to learn something.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on who that person is, if it's a person who's already had a rather full life and had a number of adventures, well, I suspect someone would be interested. And the way you interest them is the way you tell the story. It's the way you develop your voice on the page. If it's a young person who says, well, you know, I just haven't lived very much yet. I haven't had all the adventures. Well, have them. And
mm-hmm.
take your notebook with you.
Keep a journal.
Indeed.
So often when we go through experiences of life, we don't seem to think that they are very important, yet there may be that kernel of gold that's sitting in that story that can be expounded upon, that can lead you on an adventure that you would never, ever have thought would have been possible.
Yes, of course.
And that is what you found through your travels, and I think that's one of the messages, one of the many messages that you give in your book, In the Mind's Eye, Essays Across the Animate World, is that whether you're looking at a petroglyph of a handprint on a wall in New Mexico somewhere, wherever, or you're in a cave in France, or you're out checking out eagles in Kansas, it doesn't make any difference where you are. There is so much to life that you will never, ever be able to experience unless you reach out and try to touch it.
Yes, and I'm so glad you used that verb, touch. Of course, the handprints are an image from rock art across the world, not only in the desert southwest here, but all over the world. And the sense of, one wants to reach out and touch the image of someone before. Even
mm-hmm.
if you can't literally touch the paint in Chauvet Cave, you are gazing at someone who reached toward the world, and through that image is reaching toward you. And I think that's what artistic expression is all about. It's about reaching outward, the interior self reaching outward toward the world, outward toward audience, in my case, outward toward reader.
And I think you've done it eloquently. I think it makes for interesting reading. You have a lot of thought. You take us into places that maybe we will never be able to see physically, but if we do have an opportunity to travel to those parts of the world, we'll put it on our to-see list, if they're still open, especially the caves in France. You have a marvelous publication here. You obviously love having the opportunity and experience of putting your voice on the page, which I think is an eloquent way of expressing what you do. What's your website, Elizabeth, that people can go to?
Well, it's a brand new website. It's www.elizabethdodd.com.
And that's D-O-D-D.
That's correct.
.com. Elizabeth, we have about a minute here. What would you like to leave in the way of a thought for my listeners today?
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for your time. It's been lovely talking with you. I guess what I would like to leave with your listeners is the sense that we use language so frequently for utilitarian purposes, writing down a list of groceries that we need to purchase, or writing a letter to the editor of the newspaper arguing a point of view that we hold. But language is an artistic medium as well, and it is our inheritance. Every single one of us. We may not be the only species that communicates. I'm not sure about whales. I'm not sure about some birds. They may also have a rudimentary form of language. But as far as I know, we're the only species that uses language as an artistic medium.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'd just like to leave your readers with that thought, that literature is language as an art form.
I think that it is so important that we just enjoy that, that we encourage our children to enjoy it, because it really makes a difference. You're making a difference, Elizabeth. Your book, In the Mind's Eye, is excellent. Your website, people can go and find out more about you, elizabethdodd.com. Thank you for being my guest today.
Donna, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away now. I've got some good things to share with you. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com. and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna, and telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. If you are a first-time listener and you've not done it before, it's really quite simple. All you need to do is call one of our toll-free numbers, and then when you answer, I'm going to ask you for your first name or your initial, and of course I want to know what part of the country or the world you're calling in from. That's how simple it is, and then just let me do my thing, and after that, you can ask me a question about anything you like. So here are the telephone numbers that we're going to be inviting you to call in to at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Remember, during the latter part of the show, you are welcome to call in at any time, and all I need from you is your first name or your initial. I'm an information resource, and it's my pleasure to be able to share my skills with you. I've had someone say, gee, Donna, do you do private appointments? Yes, I do, and they are by appointment only, so if you'd like to give me a buzz at my office, all you have to do is call 800-872-8852. And by the way, thank you for the emails, information that you are sending to me regarding all kinds of different things. I've got some animal stories I'm going to be sharing, and I got the cutest video. Of course, I can't show you the video. From, I think it was someone in China, and they were showing this puppy and this baby duck. And this baby duck was just following this puppy, and then there was a baby, a human baby. And it was just absolutely fabulous to watch all these babies running around and interacting, and how the puppy and the duck just bonded, and they just accepted each other, and they didn't have any kind of an adversarial positioning. And it just always reminds us of how we can have comfort in our life. We don't have to always be at war with each other, for heaven's sake. We can get along. If the ducks and dogs can do it, I'm sure we can do it. I think we can, anyway. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Yes, my name is Sandy, and I'm from Auburn, Washington.
Oh, hi, Sandy. Well, if you got sunshine in Auburn, we've got it over here in Lakewood.
Yeah?
It's shining on you? Good. I'm glad to hear that. We had enough rain yesterday. I'm happy for the dryness. Thank you very much. Okay, Sandy, let's get started with you. There's a lot going on in your life, but that's nothing new. You really wouldn't have it any other way. But I'm looking at you in a bit of a quandary. Not a big one, but a bit of a quandary, because you are feeling that there is a major shift that's coming into your space. And if you went out walking a dog or just walking around your neighborhood, it's just this feel that you cannot shake. And it's not a negative type of a feel, but as I'm aware of it, it's almost as if you feel like you've got to be prepared for something. You just don't know exactly where it's coming from. And I want you to listen to this, because it is something that is right on the money with you. You are very, very sensitive to your own intuitive perceptions, and I want you to pay attention to them. You will find that if you just allow yourself to explore that sensory perceptiveness that you're getting, and sometimes it can happen mentally, physiologically, emotionally, you know, there's just all of this that comes together. It's like a fine tapestry. If you pay attention to it, respect it, and honor it, you're not going to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. You're going to be getting things done. You are going to also find that the changes that you're sensing are very real. And they are just actually soft changes, in my mind's view. They're not hard, harsh changes, but they are soft changes, and you're going to be very grateful for them. Do pay attention to your dreams, because you're going to have some very precognitive points of information relative to certain individuals that you are going to know quite well, and one of these persons will have a health problem that is specifically going to be shown to you. And this is something that's going to be happening more and more frequently with you, and there are times you're going to say, why me? What's happening with you, Sandy? Is that your receptivity is more open than at any other time in your life. And with this receptivity, it's sort of like having this radio side of the brain working that's receiving input as well as being able to send it. So you're going to have a number of synchronistic happenings in your life, especially this coming year. And there's a lot that's going on between now and the end of the year, but in the year 2009, there's going to be quite a bit that you're going to say, I would never have believed that this is possible, that XYZ was in such and such a place at such and such a time, and I had no idea I was going to be there. Those coincidences are showing you a rhythm and a rhyme in your own life that is going to give you a very, very good sense of feel and awareness of security for yourself. You've got a lot going on here, but again, you wouldn't have it any differently. What would you like to ask me about, Sandy?
Oh, well, thank you. What I wanted to ask was about a big problem. I just wanted to know if you could shed some light on it just so I could get through it. My boss. Why does she hate me? Or does she? She picks on me all the time. What can I do to stop this?
All right, now go over again. Who is it that's picking on you?
My boss at work.
Your boss. Give me an example of what's happening with your boss.
She tries to make you feel you're stupid, or she'll find something out about me, and then she sort of uses it against me. I don't even know how to explain it. It's just like, I know what she's doing, and it's like, I try to, you know, do everything right.
What kind of a job do you have?
I have a retail job.
You have a retail job. Okay.
Yes.
So what is the boss saying to you? Gee whiz, you got the number backwards. What are you, dyslexic? I mean, does she come out with that kind of a sarcastic remark?
Yeah, someone will never have shown me something, but all of a sudden I should have known, and how come I didn't do it correctly?
Well, I'll tell you the best way to my level of perception with this lady is that she's not feeling very confident about herself. And give me her first initial.
D.
Okay. What you have with this individual is someone who is in a position of authority, doesn't really like it all that much, and will do what she's doing because she has to cover up her own feeling of inadequacy and feeling overwhelmed. How long have you worked for this woman?
4 months.
All right. What you want to do is empower yourself. Inasmuch as you've not been on the job that long, you need to be a better observer of what's going on. Now, of course, being in a new job, you're going to want to do the very best. And let's say she came out with a remark, gee whiz, how come you didn't do this right? And say, well, I was not aware that there was a particular procedure. I'm so glad you're pointing this out to me. I really appreciate your letting me know what I'm not doing correctly. Thank you. Probably it'll knock her socks off. She won't know what to do with it. Remember,
like
with this kind of a personality type, and I say a type, because I think that this woman is under a lot of stress. She's not in a job that she likes at all. She does not know how to communicate because she doesn't understand a lot of the stuff that's supposed to be done either. And my perception is that she's got someone that she has to answer to, and they're not too happy with the results. She's also concerned about how are we going to make money. Am I going to be able to stay in this position? There's a lot of things she's very concerned about. So if I could encourage you to consider doing something,
mm-hmm.
Don't react like a teenager. Don't feel like you're the scum of the earth. If you can recall the way you felt when you were a teenager, when anybody criticized you, you just want to shrivel up and turn into a slug somewhere and disappear, right?
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Yes, okay. You're not a teenager anymore. You're a mature woman, you're intelligent, and you can learn new things. So I would say, remember, you're a student. You're in an environment where you are learning how to adapt. Be that person that when you go into work, that you've got a smile on your face, because most of the people around you don't.
No, I went and smiled the other day, and they knocked it. Then she made sure she got it out of me, man. I was smiling when I left that day.
Well, then you take control. You take control of who you are. And if she has a derogatory remark, and let's face it, there are people in life that are going to be that way.
Yes, that's
don't
true.
Give her the power. You're still learning. There's a lot of things you don't know about the business that you need to know.
Correct.
So express your appreciation to her. In fact, why don't you really make her day? And maybe sometime next week, ask if you could speak to her for a moment. And she's automatically going to think that you're just going to blow up or do something that she just has to. Watch her body language. You're going to find her pulling in like she's getting ready for a battle. Just watch her body language. And what I would suggest that you do is call her by name and address her in a proper form, like Ms. So-and-so, whatever her last name is. I want you to know something. I have been on this job for 4 months, and because of you and the other people here, I have been learning so much. And I know that it's been very tough on you because I'm a newbie. I want you to just know how much I appreciate your patience with me. Now, she doesn't have any patience.
No, she doesn't. I have patience a lot compared to her a lot.
Okay, hon. But do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. I thank you so much, Donna.
You are welcome. So you take care, hon. And smile. Make their whole day totally miserable. Smile.
Yeah, you brought a smile to my face. You did. Thanks.
You're welcome, hon.
Okay,
this
bye.
Is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for just a moment. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. Canadians 888-815-9756 or 530-876-3222. Lines are open. Come on, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. I'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. To Tacoma, Washington 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Now, I know we've got a caller on the line. Before I go to that caller, though, I want to let you know that we have got a wonderful guest, Michael Schwartz, that's going to be on with us tomorrow. He's just put out a publication called Health and Disease Symbology. Wow, is this loaded with all kinds of insights about the various organs of the body, various conditions that can affect those organs, what the mind-body connection is, and so on and so forth. Now, Louise Hayes was a forerunner with this many, many years ago by one of her publications, but he has just given so much more, and I know you're going to enjoy Michael Schwartz. And then we've got a great lineup of people next week. How would you feel about having traveled in the 1950s or 60s in a small boat across the Atlantic? Well, we're going to be interviewing on Monday a 78-year young woman who did exactly that. Pacific Lady, that's what she is, at Sharon Seitz Adams. You're not going to want to miss it. We've got such a wonderful guest lineup next week. Tell your friends and listen in because it's worth it. Let's go to our next guest. Hi, welcome to the show. First name or initial, where are you calling from?
Hello?
Hi, dear. First name or initial?
Oh, first name is Shane C.
And where are you calling from, Shane?
From California.
Where in California?
Oh, Los Angeles.
From L.A. That's where I was born and raised. Good old Los Angeles.
Yay.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I hope to be down there in February. I'm looking forward to that at the Conscious Life Expo. I'm going to be
speaking. Great.
Yes, and maybe even be giving a workshop. So That'll be coming out in my newsletter. So I'll be giving information about that, too. Well, let's get down to business, Shane.
Okay.
The first thing that is coming into my mind, it's like I'm looking at a number of picture frames. When I say picture frames, it's like out of a movie. You know how on a reel you have the frames of a scene, and then they run quickly and they run together. The first image that I got was one of the past. And it seems like you have put that around you, and it's sort of like an old robe. Then the next image I was getting was one of a single tear coming out of an eye. And there is something that still causes you a touch of sadness relative to the past. And then the next thing I was looking at was you're taking off the robe and putting it away. In fact, it's like it's going into a chest. And I think the day is going to come when you're going to share your story, either through talking to someone, maybe you're going to be giving a program of some kind, or you're going to write about it. But the old robe of the past is being discarded. And there isn't a real strong emotional link because I just saw the single tear on your cheek, but it is still something that touches you in a very, very special way. Now, the holidays are coming up. I want to encourage you, don't overload on to-dos for the holiday. I want you to give yourself some time. If there's a local zoo that you want to go to that has all kinds of decorations up, give yourself some time to breathe during this upcoming holiday season. The reason is you are going through some very significant decision-making processes. And if you don't give yourself the downtime, then those decision-making processes are going to be all congested. And you may forget to do some of the things that you really need to do to help you get through the process easily and comfortably. These changes should not be done under a lot of duress or stress. There shouldn't be any kind of trauma associated with them, but you do need the clarity. So you need that quiet time that can be yours. You'll have a fabulous holiday season if you do that for yourself. Don't feel like you've got to go out and be the 5,000 cookie maker person. It's not required. You don't have to be the volunteer for 10,001 different jobs. So be aware, be good to yourself, because 2009, you're stepping into a whole new self-designed environment of choice. And this is so good. You will have wished that you could have done it 10 years ago, but the timing wasn't right. Now it is right. And this is opportunity for you. You're not going backwards. You're going forward. What would you like to ask me about today?
Wow, that was interesting.
Why was it interesting?
Because the only thing I could think of, I don't necessarily know if it's from the past, but I feel like I'm shedding my skin. Like this whole year, I feel like I am just rebirthing.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's what you mean. But I was going to ask you specifically about career.
All right.
What I would need to focus on or do for the next couple of months before the coming of the new year.
What is it that you do and what is it you would like to do?
Well, I'm an actress and I would like to continue acting.
Well, I don't see any challenge with that. I think what you will need to think about is, there a niche that you want to put yourself into? Is there an environment that you want to see yourself associated with relative to the acting world? I think you will always be involved in acting.
Yeah.
I don't think that will ever go away, whether it's a little theater in your local community to having an opportunity to do a film. I think it's always going to be a part of you. I do believe, though, that there are some, I'll call them acting classes, for the lack of a better term, where there are going to be some principals of those classes who will be talking about the changes in the environment of acting, the various technologies that are evolving. And you're going to find it so interesting that you're going to want to take more than one class along these lines, and it is going to serve you well because one of those principles will give you an opportunity to step up to the mark of challenge to be able to emerge into a new level of technology that is going to give you a wonderful opportunity to do what you really, really love. But there's something else other than acting that you have your eye on as well.
I think it's probably spirituality, like either becoming, like I feel like eventually I'm going to actually become a spiritual teacher of some sort. Like, I don't know why, but I've always been drawn to that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's what you're seeing, but that's what I feel.
Well, when you were talking about career, I'm not seeing that in the classification as career. I'm looking at that more as hobby. And I say that not to downgrade it. But it's not as if the teaching situation is going to be coming about to the degree that perhaps you would like it to be for maybe about another 10 or 15 years.
Got you.
So that's okay. That's not bad. But there was something else that's in the back of the head.
Is it writing?
Yes. Yeah. That may be it. That may be it. That may be something, but it's more than writing. It's more than writing. It is developing a composite of form and style. Oh, my goodness, dear. I just looked at the clock. I've got to go.
Oh.
We're out of time.
Well, thank you.
You are so welcome, Kim. And you have a wonderful day.
You too.
This is Donna Sebo. My goodness, time goes by so fast when you're having fun. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. We'll be back same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Talk with you then. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.